Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today, we continue our conversation with Rabbi Kushner about living a life that matters.
In living a life that matters, you say that we have, right off the bat, you say that there are two voices of God. And so it's not just the conflict, and you use the phrase conflict in the subtitle. It's not just a conflict that we bring to an understanding of our lives, of conscious success. It starts with God. I mean, what are the two voices of God that you're talking about?
I'll tell you how I came to this insight, Dick. My previous book was How Good Do We Have to Be? And I would go around the country, and I remember it happened in Seattle when I was here 5 years ago promoting that book. And I would give people the message, you know, you don't have to be perfect. It's such a complicated thing to be a good person. God doesn't expect perfection from you. God forgives you for your flaws. God loves you anyway. And 3/4 of the people in my audience would respond favorably to that. And a certain number would have problems with it. They would say, I don't want to be loved anyway. I want to be recognized as the good person I am. I want the message that I'm loved because I'm lovable, not because the other person is so patient and forgiving. And I realized that we do hear two messages from God. That it's sort of like Eric Fromm in The Art of Loving many years ago, what he spoke of as mother love and father love. And by the way, a parent of either gender is capable of both kinds of loving. Mother love says, you are bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, and nothing you ever do or fail to do will stop me from loving you. Father love says, I will love you if you get good grades, if you make the team, if you get into a good college, if you get a good job, if you make me proud of you. First unthinking reflection is mother love is good, warm, fuzzy, comforting. Father love is bad, withholding, conditional. But if you think about it, there are times when we're down on ourselves, we need that message of I love you no matter what you do. But there are times when we want the message, you're good. You have earned my love. I love you because you are lovable, because you deserve it. I meet so many people, men especially, who walk around wounded for their entire lives because they never got the message from their father, you're good and you have earned my love. And I think we need both. Sometimes God thunders down, thou shalt and thou shalt not, and you better do this or else. And sometimes a message from God is a mother message, the feminine side of God. I understand you're doing your best, and I know you feel bad about what didn't work out, and I want to assure you I love your whole self.
What do you say to the person whose quest for success is being carried out, they say, without reference to God, that God's uninvolved, I don't believe in God, how does that person relate to these issues?
The good news is God doesn't care who gets the credit. The real issue is, all right, so you're carrying on your quest for success unrelated to God. Does that mean you will do things that are a little shady, a little unethical? You will exaggerate the virtues of your product. You will not tell people about flaws, about side effects, about mistakes. Does that mean you will cook the books a little bit? Is that what you mean by doing it without God? Or are you saying, I consider myself an ethical person without putting a label on it? The question is, what will you do when nobody's watching?
Yeah.
What will you do if you know you couldn't get caught? If you will come to the conclusion, and Socrates says that in one of the Platonic dialogues, if you could be invisible and do anything you want and nobody could catch you, would you do wrong things?
Mm-hmm.
And his answer is, no, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. There is nothing I could think of that I would do knowing I would have to live with the consequences. It's not just a question of being arrested, it's just a question of being embarrassed. I don't want to be a person who acts like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the essential conflict within every single person, the desire to do what I want, to get what I'm after, to succeed, to have an impact on the world, and that sense of morality, which I think is inborn and innate, irrespective of religious affiliation. It's the story I tell, quoting the Native American chief, who says, there are two dogs inside me. One is a mean, vicious dog, and one is a good, gentle dog, and they're always fighting. And somebody says, which one wins? He says, the one I feed most.
Well, speaking of winning, you have another chapter, Winning by Losing. And by the way, anybody that is fascinated with the character of Jacob is going to find this a most fascinating book. I've always found him one of the most complex characters in the biblical tradition because it's all there. And you choose Jacob, and he's such a great example of someone who is in this constant battle, especially younger in his life, between the good and the dark side and the good, you know, angels, the higher nature.
Yes, I chose Jacob as the hero of my book for that moment when he wrestles with the angel, which I understood as wrestling with his conscience. And the more I wrote the book, the more I realized that his entire life is a template for what I was writing about. When he is an adolescent, he is like a whole lot of adolescents, like the adolescent I remember being. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like himself. He's really down on himself because he does things that he knows are wrong. You know, adolescents could be so beautifully idealistic and sensitive and so cruel and exploitative. And there is this split, the two dogs inside them, that they're always having to contend with. And the story of Jacob's life is a story of his trying to bring these two halves of his soul together and establish a sense of integrity. The night he wrestles with the angel, just before he has to face his brother for the first time in 20 years, and he remembers his brother's parting words 20 years ago, "Next time I see you, I'm going to kill you for what you did to me." And now he's got to face his brother again, and he's scared, and he wants to run away, and he wants to find some clever way of avoiding this, which is what he's always done. And he hates himself for being somebody who runs and deceives and tries to trick his way out of things. He faces up to it. The Bible describes him after that night of wrestling. He is injured, he is limping, he is defeated, but he is whole in a way he's never been before. He's achieved integrity. He has integrated the two sides of his personality, the side that wants to get ahead and the side that wants to be good. And he's come to conclude that the only way you can do it is by doing both together. It doesn't pay to try and get ahead by sacrificing your ethics.
The significance of a name change in that moment in his life.
Well, realize in the biblical world, and to a greater extent than we realize in our world, your name is more than a label, more than identification. It is who you are. Your name conveys your essence. People change their names as a way of saying, "I'm not the same person I was last year." The professional athlete who becomes a Muslim and takes on a Muslim name. The Jew who becomes an Orthodox Jew and wants to be known by his Hebrew name instead of his English name. The whole question of when a woman gets married, does she keep her family name, take on her husband's name, hyphenate the two names? It's a statement about how much is the essence of who she is changed by the fact that she's getting married. Is she an entirely new person when she becomes a wife, or is she the same person who has added this association to her life? The Bible, when it changes Jacob's name, is saying he's not the same person anymore, and the name is significant. Jacob in Hebrew means the trickster, the tripper-upper. And Israel means the one who struggles, the one who wrestles with God. I refer in that book to the two kinds of morality, the morality of cleverness, in which the highest virtue is to find the other person's weakness and outsmart him, and the greatest shame is to be outsmarted, and the morality of virtue, in which the highest virtue is to be kind to somebody and the worst sin is to be cruel to somebody. And Jacob evolves from the first style of morality to the second. That's why he's such a complicated figure, because you really see him start out and grow and change. You see him as a child, as an adolescent, as a young adult, as a husband and father, as an old man, and he comes together there.
Join us next time for more of our conversation with Rabbi Kushner. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse. Thank you for listening to The Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's K-I-N-D-L-I-N-G-S. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.